This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Say hello. And before that, I want to remind you, BFM 89.9, the number one radio station in the nation.
He gets paid an awful lot of money for that. Over here is the man with the news, Mr. Harry Fruz.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gents. We'll be with you for the next few minutes, of course, discussing fuel subsidies, after sales worries, and we have a review of the new Nike / Citroen C3 Aircross.
So don't touch that dial.
Coming up on the show in the next few minutes. I don't know what he's been taking. Right. First, though, of course, it's the man with the news, Harry Fruz.
Right, so last week we gave a few, notices about the fuel subsidies.
We did.
Thing. Talking about fuel subsidies, and
no,
now,
wait. Yeah, no flying cars this week.
No flying cars this week.
You know, yes. it's due this month. Right?
We spoke about it. Did you not tune in last week?
No, I was in your motherland,
Austria.
What?
No, I was en route back to Malaysia, uh-huh. And I got stuck. In the mother of all storms in Heathrow.
Oh dear, oh
and
dear.
And I was stuck there for 12 hours.
Oh, how was that?
It was lovely.
I bet it was.
I met so many of your relatives, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And most of them look like me.
And did they all pay £10 for a cup of coffee whilst you were there as well?
Well, you know, I had the unfortunate situation,
yes,
of flying business class.
Oh, that's so
wow.
Terrible. Yeah, let's talk about those people that need petrol subsidies.
So my coffee was free.
Anyway, so big news actually for the people living in this area, the peninsula of Malaysia. Mm. Starting 2020, petrol subsidies will be removed and RON95 will start floating.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Daniel, your thoughts, please.
A lot of people are going to be upset, but I love this idea because you know why? Malaysians waste way too much fuel already. You know, you see people idling outside schools waiting for their kids. Why don't you just get out of the car? I know it's hot. I know it's humid. But come on, you're just idling there for half an hour, 45 minutes because you know why? I do the same.
Oh.
But, I mean, I think the fact that RON95, the fact that it's going to start floating again, right. I think fuel prices are definitely going to go up.
And for sure.
Of course it's going to go up. And you see now, 90% of Malaysians use RON95 even when some of their cars are supposed to use RON97 because they're trying to save money.
Yeah.
So as cars get more modern, engines get more modern, especially now the new engines that are coming in, even for the smaller cars, it's better to use RON97. But you can use RON95, but long-term effects are there. So with this flotation, I think it's going to be a fair game, probably 60, 40, 70, 30. It's good news also for hybrid and EV cars. Mm.
I guess so. But, you know, I mean, apparently this month, without the fuel petrol subsidies, this week, I should say, apparently the price could be RM2.30. And sometime in September, it was reported that RON95 was RM2.49. So
right.
There's a lot of sense. And you could lose a litre or two in that, you know.
But you have to be frugal. Don't waste your fuel.
Yeah,
don't.
True.
If you live in Klang Valley, don't drive all the way to Ipoh to have chicken rice. You can have it here.
I mean, the other thing as well, is this going to be like floated dependent on the filling station as well?
No, market conditions.
Market conditions, yeah. Okay. Because the idea of people driving to a different state to fill up their car and then driving back is something that I've always gone, why?
But that happens in the UK.
It does.
Because state by state is different fuel prices. Also, correct. You know, hypermarkets have their own fuel.
Correct, yes. People are silly all over the place, aren't
right,
they?
Right.
Well, anyway, the petrol subsidy program that they're calling the PSP. Right. This is not the PlayStation. But this is the targeted fuel subsidy scheme, and it will apparently benefit more than 2.8 million Malaysians and will halve the government's cost of fuel subsidies from 133 million ringgit to 65.4 million, which is pretty good. So do you guys want to hear, the
please,
details?
Oh, he's because I benefit.
He's got numbers and statistics.
Really? A guy in business class benefits from this?
Yeah, because my cars are more than 10 years old and my cars are small cc, below 1.6.
Well, apparently, this new subsidy mechanism will only benefit vehicle owners on the Bantuan Sara Hidup payment, so the BSH,
right.
Also known as, I think, a lot of the B40 are qualified for this. So the other thing is, household incomes must be below 4,000 ringgit. You must, as Daniel said, own a car below 1.6 litres or a bike below 150 cc. you can own a car above 1.6 liters. So if you have a 2002 Wira with a 1.8, you can still qualify for it as long as the car is older than 10 years. As for the remunerations, how much money you get from this, if you qualify for it, you get 30 ringgit a month for car owners, and you get 12 ringgit a month for bike owners. And if you own both a car and a bike, you'll still only get 30 ringgit, not 42. This will be directly debited into the person who qualifies their accounts once every 4 months. So they will get 120 ringgit, something like that.
Mm.
But I think generally a lot of people don't like the fact that petrol subsidies are gone, but a lot of people also, you know, say this is a pretty good thing for
it's time to move on.
Yeah, exactly. Strangely enough, though, before I think a few months before this came out, the government did admit that the implementation for this would be very messy. That's one of the issues. And then the other issue is that while 12 ringgit may be enough for bikers, 30 ringgit per month might not seem enough for cars.
I do agree, especially if you're driving a very old car, it's not going to be fuel efficient. But if you're willing to pay 18 ringgit for a coffee, you can buy fuel.
That's a fair point.
Yes.
I mean, but this is for the B40 group.
But the B40 group also go into, you know, fancy
Starbucks,
cafes,
I guess.
And buy 18 ringgit coffee.
Well, the other thing is, I don't know, but so the Trade and Consumer Affairs Minister, Dato' Saifuddin Nasution, says that the PSP benefits 2.8 million Malaysians. So according to Road Transport Department statistics, there are roughly 18 million cars and bikes in Malaysia. And if you deduct the 2.8 million that qualifies for this program, there's 15.2 million cars here, right? And he says that 10% of Malaysians only use RON 97, which means the other 13.7 Malaysians will have higher fuel costs. So it kind of seems like, yes, this is benefiting a lot of the B40 group. And sure, they will get a sum of money to like deflect the cost of the floating fuel price mechanism, right? But there's a whole 13.7 Malaysians who don't get to. And mind you, we are talking a lot these days about the shrinking middle class, the rising cost of living that hasn't really been attended to yet. So it's a very, very confusing conversation right now.
At the end of the day, though, it's saving the government, 60 million ringgit.
Yeah. So I guess pros and cons, right?
It'll also prompt a lot of people to use public transport and reduce traffic congestion in the city.
I mean, it'd be interesting to know at some point what is happening to that 60 million ringgit. How are they reinvesting that towards transportation somehow? Are they using it towards public transportation?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they're using it to, I don't know, resurface roads perhaps in some places of town, which we could do with.
Better medical, better schooling.
Whatever they're doing with it, you know, I mean, we know they are hard-pressed. I think this is a good thing, but you're right, there is going to be a bunch of people still suffering from because of this.
Yeah, and I guess we will only be able to see the bigger picture of what they'll be doing
only
with
time
the
will
60
tell.
Million, you know, because the budget 2020 is coming out soon.
Mm.
But anyway, the next story, we do have a story from Daniel. It's about after sales worries.
Mm. Oh, here we go.
So
I'm just going to get comfy.
Comfy, relax. Okay, very simple. If you start to notice, car sales are dipping generally across the board. Of course, certain brands are still enjoying very good sales simply because of price advantage. But a lot of luxury cars, a lot of imported cars, and a lot of what I would say technical cars are starting to lose their glam and glitz in the
sheen.
The sheen. And the reason is very simple. A lot of companies in the last couple of years chased after new car sales. They forgot about after sales. Now, when you bring in a new vehicle, especially nowadays with all the fancy dashboards, the fancy safety equipment features and everything else, you need enough hands behind the scenes to look after the customer.
Yeah.
On top of that, you need enough hands that are well-trained enough to understand this. And lastly, you need to be able to have a strong warranty package. Now, it's easy for someone to say, I'll give you a 5-year warranty. A couple of days ago, I bought a little simple coffee machine at a sale. And they said, oh, we'll give you a 2-year warranty plus an additional 3 months. Now, did I read the warranty card? No. Did I ask them for the terms and conditions? No. I said, oh, I got an additional 3 months. Signed the dotted line, took my coffee machine home. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in month number 25, which is part of the additional 3 months, because I didn't read the terms and conditions. But it's a few hundred ringgit coffee machine. Now, when you buy a car, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, even a $100,000 car, you get a 5-year warranty. Do you read the terms and conditions? A lot of people are not reading this. They're just saying, okay, I got a warranty, I'm safe to go. But things are starting to go wrong even in year one and year two. And cars are getting stuck. And owners are having to go without cars. And what's happening? Ride sharing is benefiting from this because people start using ride sharing and their cars are sitting in workshops. So where does this all end? Very simple. Car companies are not selling enough cars now to keep their showrooms manageable. And after sales is getting a lot of beef.
Mm.
Now, why aren't they going back to basics and saying, let's look after our customers?
Mm.
And when I talk to some of them, they say, yeah, but you know, we need to sell cars first. You've already sold enough. You'll make back in after sales. But the sad part is all this is because principals, the car brands itself, from the foreign countries, they want to get their profits first.
Mm.
They want to show their competitors, I've beaten you this quarter, I've beaten you this year. The game of beating each other doesn't make sense because why? If your after sales is also beating each other, then you're just beating yourself in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
There's enough cars on the road as it is. What we want to be doing is keeping those cars that are already on the road running.
Running.
You know,
the ownership experience has been forgotten.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, there was a report, I think, a couple of weeks ago online where this company, I can't remember who it was, but they did a whole survey on quality and all that stuff. And it was a global report, and they were saying that despite, you know, the mechanicals of cars being very, very reliable these days, is the new technology inside it, like the screens and everything, all that will, well, I don't want to say this, but will somehow fail in the future.
Yes.
That is obviously a big thing because, you know, you still nowadays you hear stories of people sending their cars back to their dealers and telling them like, oh, yeah, this is not working. This has a bug in it. And they still have to keep going back and forth because
it's never solved in the first visit.
Exactly.
I think a lot of this has to do with the way in which mechanics are trained as well nowadays.
I mean,
if you look back just 5-10 years ago, mechanics fix mechanical things. You know, they fix your exhaust, they fix your engine, they put your new tires on.
Now they're software engineers.
Now they have to be software engineers as well.
You know, the funny thing is all these things that are going wrong, most of it, is coming from third-party vendors.
Right.
It's not coming from the car company itself.
Yeah.
But they're forced to include all this because the new generations of buyers, like our friend here, Arif, they like a lot of toys in the car. Mm.
I do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these days also, a technician can't simply just plug in an OBD reader, an onboard computer reader, and look at all the problems because the problems only on the screen only tell you so much. You still have to go diagnose it.
Exactly.
And as we know with software, Mr. Tech here, Rich, as he knows, once there is a bug, there is a million lines of code that you have to go through to solve that one little buggy problem.
Yeah.
So
and
it's
that takes time, and time takes money.
Yep.
Right. That's why, though, right? You know, it's because they know that they're losing money every time somebody comes back and says, I have a problem.
Exactly. So they're not addressing the problem. But you see, if you sold the car to start off with, without having so much technical features, you'll have less problems to deal with in after sales.
Mm.
But if you don't want to deal with that, then now's the time for you to actually buckle down and say, I'm sorry, I'm suffering. You know, I got to change everything. And then the cost goes back to the manufacturer who earlier made a lot of profits. And end of the day, now he's losing money back on warranty claims. So where's the end game? The consumer loses. The consumer keeps losing.
Let us know what you think about this, folks, over on Instagram. We'll have a post up about this, discussing after sales woes. Have you had some woes? Have you had some troubles? Give us some feedback. We'll talk about it perhaps next week.
Yep.
Something to talk about.
Yep.
Let's do some car launches then, shall we? It's a very slim week this week.
Slim week, yeah. I think everybody's...
one major car.
One we've covered this quite many times, but it's finally been launched. It's the Mazda CX-5. I believe they've added two variants. So there's a total of five variants now. Mm. It starts from 137,000 ringgit for the base model, which is a 2-liter engine. And then it goes all the way to the top at 178,000 ringgit, where you get the 2.5-liter turbo.
Four-wheel drive.
Four-wheel drive, yes.
Fully loaded.
Yep. All of the cars get all the safety systems, but you go from level 2 to 5 in terms of the specs, and you get 360-degree cameras. As usual, I think Mazdas are fairly well-specced, so there's no need to worry about that. But the 2.5 turbo, as mentioned in the weeks before, Now you can get a two-wheel drive version at 164,000 ringgit and a four-wheel drive version at 178,000 ringgit. And of course, with that turbo, 228 horsepower and 420 newton meters of torque, which is a lot. And you get to save a lot of money on petrol as well.
Ta-da!
Yep.
Should we take a break?
Yeah, we should.
Ladies and gents, if you're only just joining us, it's a bit late for that. You've missed our talk about the fuel subsidies and the petrol subsidy program. And of course, we talked about after-sales woes. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll be talking all about the Fat Mini. I mean, the Citroen C3 Aircross. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury. Today, as usual, I'm joined in the studio by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Hello, and you forgot to say BFM 89.9, the number one radio station in the nation.
There he goes again.
Too much coffee for this one this morning. And of course, the man giving in the corner is Arif Ruse, the man with the news. Say hello.
Hello.
Right, car launches then we've had. We had the Mazda CX-5. We're going to move on to a different kind of French car right now.
Yeah.
First glances.
Yes.
It looks like something vaguely familiar.
Like a Mini.
It does look like a Mini.
Yes. And you know, when I first saw it and I said to someone, this looks like a Mini, they said, no, you know, you're just being silly about it.
Right.
But
no, it does.
It does. And the funny thing is, when I took it out, some people actually, without seeing the front or the back, just by the side profile, oh, new Mini.
Right.
because it looks a lot like a Countryman.
Ah, not just me then.
Ah, it's not just you. Malaysians as well.
Yeah.
So we took this new Citroen C3 Aircross out. Now, before we go, I don't ask me why it's called Aircross.
I was saying it sounds like a Nike sneaker.
Yep.
Probably because it looks like a sneaker. It's, you know, if you see the pictures, it's got red, it's got white, it's got black, it's got so many little touches on it. Uh-huh. It's a very nice designed car. And the thing with Citroen is, you know, you either love it or hate it at first look. So, like some Citroens, when you look at it first, you say, not so much. But given enough time, you'll say, hey, I like this car.
Citroen cars are a bit like that. It's a love-hate relationship.
Yes. I think a lot of the their cars in the mid-2000s, I think it's the Picasso.
Yes.
And there's this.
My dad had a Picasso for years. And every time it pulled up, I'm like, oh, when's he going to change his
car? Your dad had a Picasso. He's quite a rich man. Eh?
Well, no. This was, second-hand one.
Oh, this is the car.
Uh-huh. But I mean, you look at a Picasso these days, and you're like, you know, the design
made a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Because when you get inside the Picasso, the acres of room inside.
Yes.
And, you know, the whole visual experience, kids love it. But anyway, you were a kid, so you loved it.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time. You be careful. Carry on.
So the C3, we took it out and then we said to ourselves, you know, okay, it's a quirky looking car. It's got a lot of fun in it. It's got a lot of, you know, energy, you know, when you look at it because of the color and the way it's put together. And all the cars sold come two-tone. So it's, you know, so many variations of two-tone colors. So it's very interesting when you look at the brochure. But a lot of people also say Citroen, after sales.
Quality, sometimes.
Quality, resale value. You know, all these things come out when someone meets the car. No matter how good looking it is, no matter how sexy it is, these are the general statements that Malaysians will make. And it comes from both sexes, and it comes from all ages. I mean, all ages in terms of drivers. And because I had it over a weekend, you know, I bumped into a lot of people, friends, family, and whatever else. And I told all of them this. I said, okay, go on online and check and see the used car prices for Citroens. So when you go, yes, they are low, but they're not like way lower than the rest. Okay, they're a little bit lower. So, okay, you lose a little bit of money because why? It's not a popular car. It's not a popular brand. You don't have many on the road. Go on Facebook and check about their reliability. Go to the Facebook pages of the individual, you know, like for C5,
right.
C8, and then Citroen in general. The reliability ratings are not that bad. They're not the best, but they're not that bad. Amongst the European brands, they stand quite well side by side. Again, because they don't sell a lot of cars. So the hands in the workshop can take their time to look at a car. So having said all that, I said, okay, you know, this car, you know, think about it. So more and more people started thinking, maybe, you know, yeah, let's sit inside. You sit inside, it's a nice, airy feeling. Now, Citroen calls this an MPV. I have to disagree.
It's not an MPV.
It's not an MPV.
It's not.
But in Europe, they call it an MPV. I would say it's a crossover. You know, it's something sitting high up. It's not four-wheel drive. It's got that crossover wagon-type shape. I would say let's leave it as a crossover or let's leave it as a sports wagon. Now, sports wagon means it's got to be fast? No, it's sporty looking. 17-inch wheels, sitting high off the ground, a little bit of aerodynamic styling, those sleek lights, you know? I like it. But on the inside, you got two color tones. You got, you know, aircon vents that look like they came out of some space machine, you know, which Citroen is famous for. The gear lever, the handbrake lever, everything is very quirky in design and very Citroen. So we take it out for a drive. It's a three-cylinder 12-valve engine. So it's the same engine as the Peugeot 208 4-door.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the same engine. It's part of the same group, PSA Group. They own both brands. So it's shared across. It's a 1.2-liter turbocharged engine. So the first thing some people said when I told them about the power, can go up Genting or not?
the must answer.
The
question.
Must answer. I said, okay, how often do you go up Genting? Every weekend? No. Last time? Oh, last year I went once. Okay. To go up Genting once or twice, I think can la. To go up Genting every weekend or so can la. But if you have five sumo wrestlers inside, you can still go. But you need to have a little bit more pressure on the accelerator pedal. But it'll go because why? It's got 112 brake horsepower, which is pretty decent for this day and age. It's got 205 newton meters of torque. So you can drop a gear and you can climb up Genting. But if you're going to do it five times a day, then you're going to really strain the engine and gearbox. But nobody's going to do that. So going up Genting, no issue. Six-speed gearbox, very simple, very straightforward. Nothing complicated. The car sells for $115,888.
You know, that price, I didn't think a Citroen would be priced that. But
exactly.
It's a very competitive price.
So it's priced very close to the Honda HR-V. Slightly less than the Mazda CX-3. Slightly less than the Toyota CHR, which all have their own quirky design looks and everything else. Yeah. Some people like the sleek design. Some like something rounded. Some like something futuristic. Then you've got this Citroen. So you've got an option here to look at a car that's slightly different. Seats 5 with comfort, luggage room, low consumption. Now with petrol prices going up, 1.2-liter engine.
Makes sense.
Think about it. Yeah. Priced, how much can you lose on a $115,000, ringgit French car?
Young family kind of aimed at.
Yeah. And I think even, you know, if someone like you, Richard, you know, you're coming to your retirement, you know, this will be good because, you know, for your height, easy to get in and out.
I'll be retiring you in a minute.
You know, you want to carry your groceries, you know, when you know, if you have pets, you want to put them at the back. It's
right.
Easy, you know.
Right, right, right.
Great for, you know, the retired expat in Malaysia.
I mean, you're right because the other day I was just driving a Volvo XC40.
Right.
And one of the things that struck me was that it's a different car from its segment in the sense that it's bigger. Yeah. It's way more usable in space. But that costs 250K.
Right.
This one costs 116,000.
Half the price.
And if you look
not as fast.
Not as fast, sure. But if you look at its competitors, the HR-V, the Mazda CX-3,
right.
Those things are tiny.
Yes.
This is quote-unquote an MPV.
Correct.
Which, you know, you can stuff literally everything in there.
Yes.
But didn't Paradua, you know, market the Myvi originally as an MPV as well?
You see, names, anyone can give it a name.
Right.
Yeah. The Paradua Aros is called an SUV.
Mm.
But I call it a crossover. Mm. Car companies are free to name it whatever they want. That's up to them. Like some people call certain vehicles a CUV, you know?
Yeah, the BMW calls all the X-Class SAV.
What's a CUV?
You know, comfortable urban vehicle.
Oh, my word.
You know? So there's so many names. You can just create one. Like you said, BMW has been doing this for years. Mm. From their first X5 until now, sports activity vehicle, not SUV.
Yeah.
Because they find their SUVs, like their cars, very exciting to drive. So it's up to you what you want to call it. We call it the perfect car for Richard during his retirement.
On that note, 5-point inspection. Who are its competitors?
Competitors, I just mentioned the Mazda CX-3, yep. Toyota CHR, the Honda HR-V. You know, these are its competitors right now. Price range and also in terms of what it serves.
Back to back, what's good about it and what do you think it lacks?
Okay. I would say what it lacks is the possibility of, you know, maybe smaller tires and wheels, and maybe more in-car connectivity. Because why? I can see a lot of younger people buying these cars. I don't
You've just said it was for retired expats.
Yeah. But you see, now, if I've got more connectivity in it, I can see younger people buying it because why? It's a lifestyle vehicle. And why I say smaller wheels and tires, because 17-inch wheels and tires are expensive when it comes to replacement. Mm. When you're driving just in the city, you don't need such big wheels. Of course, it looks nice. But, you know, let's be practical about it. Number two, I think having a sunroof, a glass sunroof, will be a great feature. Of course, it'll add the price. But that is something which people in this segment, you've got this quirky look, this, you know, this funky style car, and you have a glass sunroof, added feature.
You know, you mentioned the PSA Group.
Right.
This car is, I guess, very similar to the 2008.
In terms of engine.
In terms of engine and maybe the chassis?
I don't think so because it is a bigger car.
So, what do you think is the difference between this and that? Why should I go for this instead of the
Much
Peugeot?
Bigger. The Peugeot is smaller. The Peugeot is a small hot hatch. Mm. It really is a hot hatch. It's quick, nippy, fast, great steering feel and everything else. But this is a bigger vehicle. Very great turning radius. I mean, you know, I live in the old part of PJ. Turning radius is fantastic. So like an old man like you, Richard, you know, when you're retired, you want to take all those little streets, you know.
That's perfect. Right. That's perfect. Right.
Perfect. So final question. At 115,000 ringgit, should you consider this over its competitors? Because it's very competitively priced.
I think you should take it out for a test drive and decide whether you need the added space which it provides against its competitors, or are you willing to gamble a little bit on the double chevron? Which is the logo of the Citroen.
Yes. There you go, ladies and gents. That, of course, was Daniel's review of the Citroen C3 Aircross. Thank you for tuning in, of course. If you missed any part of this show, we spoke about fuel subsidies, the after-sale worries that Daniel is having in his old age. And then, of course, the car review was Citroen C3 Aircross. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Don't forget, we have an Instagram page.
At BFM Cruise Control.
Where we're asking you about your after-sales worries this week. Let us know. On behalf of Arif Ruse and Daniel Fernandez, my name is Rich Bradbury. This has been Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.